Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Hello.
Yes, it's Tuesday night with our admirable friends. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everybody.
It always kind of makes me kind of giggle inside after I hear the intro and think to myself, wow, this is a show and it's Tuesday night again.
Yeah. What amazes me is how consistent Serena is when she introduces us.
Her voice is lovely. Lovely.
We got Alex with us tonight.
Hello,
we do. Hello, Alex.
So we got all three in the ring today, and it's a great show, Apathy and Persistence. One of our favorites.
I like this one. I like it. As opposed to last week, the Virtue and the Vice one, which I thought was a struggle for me.
Was it?
I don't know. You know, it's not.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's that wrong idea about virtue, that idea that we're trying to be virtuous in order to compare to an external ideal of some kind, instead of using virtue as a means for becoming more skillful, you know, an internal taking that vow or taking that virtue on.
It's a baseline, sort of like,
yeah.
Little.
But I think one way to easily think about virtue is when you practice your speech. You know, that's one virtue that directly relates to paying more attention to your intention. Really being careful that before you speak, being truthful, timely, and beneficial is a real good virtue. But, you know, without spending too much time on recap, I don't want to spend too much time on the recap of virtue, only because we've got Alex and you both are willing to throw your hat in the ring relating to your experience with persistence and apathy.
Okay.
I think we should start out, as usual, with our gratitudes. And you guys feel like starting?
Sure. Do you want to let Alex can go first, since
okay,
he's the guest.
Yes, I don't mind at all. Thank you for having me here today. I too love the topic we're talking about, persistence. It's a very prevalent in my life, and I think an important topic to discuss, but grateful's first. I'm going to share my grateful this morning. I have two brothers, an older and a younger, and so it's just not like me to go ahead and single out one or the other. Would feel weird about that, so I do want to say I'm grateful to both of my brothers equally for what they provide in my life and how it gives me calm and, you know, gives me a good refuge when I'm down or when I'm needing kind of some camaraderie. Those two are there, and having that close relationship in the family, no surprise to a number one relator like me, is very endearing. So shout out to the two of those guys. Keep it up.
How sweet.
Terrific. Any actions that, well, go ahead, Carol, you go.
Excuse me. I was thinking today about how grateful I am. And this is another family gratitude, as far as a family unit that is supportive, that I have a supportive family, my immediate family, and then my sisters as well. And I say that because I had an, and it struck me today because I had a coworker that doesn't have that kind of support system, and I see how much suffering it's causing her.
To not have family?
To not have that kind of support system, not have family or maybe admirable friends for whatever reason. But it just struck me today how grateful it made me that I have such a great support system. That I feel that when I need that kind of support, just like Alex was saying on for the brothers, that, you know, when he needs it, they pick him up. And
yeah.
And so I was very grateful for that today.
Terrific. My gratitude relates to the actual show topic. When I thought about apathy and persistence, and really when I think about apathy and persistence, I really think about energy and whether someone has got low energy or high energy. Apathy would be low energy. And I am fortunate having a mother who was full of energy and having that influence on me, so I've never lacked energy or effort in what I've done. But in thinking about the show and thinking about how I've learned to use energy, I'm very grateful for the teachers that I've had, the mentors that have shown me how to use discernment with my energy, how to discern, how to choose. And I was reflecting on this, you know, because Carol, we often think that you and I are like two different guitar strings. I'm wired a little bit too tight and you're wired a little bit too loose.
Right.
You lean towards the apathy side, I lean towards the energetic persistence side. But, and so often we think of people that are over energy, you know, you say they're type A, and those that are apathetic tend to be lazy. But when you start to apply you know, the idea of being skillful and using discernment, you start to realize that in both cases, people with high energy and with low energy are acting that way. Well, definitely, I've seen people that look lazy, but the real issue is we're not sure on our choices.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's funny because the minute you said lazy, I thought, whoa, time out.
Yeah.
That's
people are categorized that way. And I've heard you say, I'm lazy, or I don't have enough energy, or whatever. But when you look at the idea of discerning and deciding and the whole aspect of skillfulness, learning how to put your actions into the context of whether they lead you to stress or whether they lead you to a reliable happiness, that whole idea of whether your guitar string is too loose or too
tight.
The repair is the same, because once you begin paying attention to your actions and your intentions, you all of a sudden have this new form of skillful energy. Things get done.
Yeah.
You know? And so it wasn't because someone was prototypically slow or lazy, or somebody was, you know, so quick and so fast and so jacked up that they weren't efficient or effective. What was really the missing aspect was the wisdom, you know, the understanding of a situation and being able to see it for what it is, and amazing how much more effective and persistent we can be all of a sudden.
Could somebody that was overly cautious, that was hesitant to make a decision, be considered apathetic?
Yeah. And that's so they are categorized as apathetic when that isn't the real issue. The real issue is there. And how do you know that they're not wiser? Because
they're hanging back a
little bit. They're hanging back saying, I don't know which choice to make. Or I don't, you know.
Or I need more information.
Right. And that's why I'm so appreciative and grateful for the teachers who taught me the wisdom faculty. Because the wisdom, the discernment factor, is what makes our energy useful. You know? My energy would be wasted before. I'd be working in 10 different areas instead of the most effective area. You might be waiting to get something off the ground because of, you know, concern for whether it's the right choice. So the issue of either being jacked up or lazy is really not a function of something we inherently have. It's really right back to that big discernment issue, Alex. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I look at the apathy and persistence, a lot of the times I don't see the apathy as lazy and persistence is just go get it. I kind of see the apathetic side is the more, it's the less skillful use of persistence. It's
right.
More misapplied persistence.
Yes.
And I'm sure as we go into this a little bit more today on the subject, it's not aligned and just kind of takes you a little bit further away and actually ends up causing more persistence on the other side to kind of unravel that, what's
right.
gone on.
Well, we've got a set of questions that I'm going to pose to both Alex and Carol relating to their personal experience with persistence and apathy. But before we get into that, let's just kind of review from our worksheet, which the handout, which everybody's got. And by the way, if you have some persistent stories or apathetic stories you want to share on the chat line, bbsradio.com/admirablefriends, or you can also call the line and we'll take a call and want to hear about it. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about everyday life of using persistence in ordinary affairs to start with, is the questions I'm going to ask you to, and then we'll work into how it applies towards the mind qualities. But in particular, from the sheet, persistence is the last of the truth qualities we're covering, the first being authenticity, the second one was virtue, and the third quality under the truth category is persistence. And it's the quality of mind that displays firm or obstinate continuance in a course of action despite difficulty or opposition. That's a short but effective description, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I really do. I love that definition. The quality of mind that displays firm or obstinate continuance in a course of action despite difficulty or opposition. It's got a bit of resolve to it, doesn't it? Persistence is, when we think of persistence, we should be thinking of energy, effort, those words energy and effort. And of course, when we consider them in terms of its integration with discernment, we're talking about effective persistence, persistence that's rightfully pointed.
Right. Well, because it's under one of the, it's the truth quality. It's categorized under the truth quality. So having the right attitude and looking at it correctly is extremely
yes.
important.
Yes.
You have to see it for what it is. And then go after it from there.
And there's a bunch of right attitudes or approaches towards effort that we could go through and list, but it's all there in the handout. I think it's better if we get into the body of some real practical experience with it, and then maybe we can weave some of these,
sure.
theoretical constructs into the discussion. So let's start with the format. And the questions that we're basically going to ask is, number one, is where have you exercised persistence in your life? Which one of you two want to start?
What do you say,
Alex? I say I started the last one. You're up.
You're up.
Okay. Well, most recently, well, I shouldn't say recent as in the last year or so, I've taken up running.
Okay.
And it has evolved into something entirely different than it started out as a year ago. And I find in just the last 6 months, there has been, I look at it in a totally different light than I did a year ago. There's more persistence towards my running. Because I think I've had more discernment, like you were saying at the beginning. I look at it differently than I did a year ago. I'm not taking as big of a chunk out of it. I'm not trying to make goals that I feel that are out of my reach. I'm trying to take small, digestible, attainable goals.
Right.
Much like we were saying about the journal. Just take one and work on one.
Right.
I think
So good planning fuels your persistence.
Absolutely. I felt like a year ago, I had grand, you know, I was going to do it, or maybe my training schedule was too aggressive.
Okay.
And so then I felt perhaps that it fell short. So I think my persistence, my example is going to be persistence towards my running.
Okay.
That's going to be...
You know, persistence, I guess, in using that energy, follows that faculty of conviction or faith in what it is you're doing. But do you notice anything different relating to the conviction in the process that kind of fueled that persistence? Did you have any
It's very strange that now I just, it's like an automatically get up and go do something having to do with my routine or my training. Whereas before I'd say, oh, I got to get up today, I got to do cross training, or I got to do this. And part of the whole plan, it was almost like I was agonizing over how to fit something in. Now it's, I think about it during the day. I can't wait till I go out the next time. I get up and I go out the door. So something, definitely the pendulum has started swinging the other way for me.
Excellent. Okay, and how about the other side of the equation? Where has there been a lack of persistence or apathy that may have caused you stress recently?
Well, I think when I started this conversation talking about it, the stress would have been, I used persistence unskillfully, in that I took too much of an aggressive approach to this training, because we had a goal in mind. We're running in October in this relay, and so it's sort of like you're with other people. It's when running is supposed to be an individual thing, but now it's part of a team thing, so you've got this group that you want to support. You don't want to let them down, so you've got this added...
You're adding that extra value.
You are. But I think where I might have, at the beginning, thought it wasn't as important to train or to do certain things, I found in the long run that I should have just followed my instincts and just kept going.
Okay. Did you feel that any of the persistence in the running, you know, the practical side of running, do you think any of your practice on the mind quality side spilled over to persistence in that? I know you've been meditating regularly with me.
I have. That's helped a lot as far as the discernment goes.
Yeah.
I really do feel that's kind of built up that wisdom quality that allows me to see certain things. Like knowing where my body's at this day, and knowing that maybe I plan to run 5, 6, 7 miles, and knowing that it might not happen, and not being disappointed in it.
Right.
Cutting myself some slack, saying, you know what? That's just the way today is, for whatever reason. You know, you just, things aren't working out. Accept it for what it is. Don't beat yourself up. Go out and see what happens. Do the best you can. It's amazing, because some days I'll go out and thinking, this is going to be a horror show. I can't, my legs can't even move. I can't even walk down the steps. And then I end up going running the furthest, farthest, fastest I've, you know.
How about journaling? Has that helped you with your persistency? I know I see you all the time putting in those miles and food that you're eating. I mean, has that helped you build that energy and keep that consistent?
It helps me to keep things in context, putting things in context. Like today, I think I'm trying to cut down on sugar, and I know that, you know, that may be a long way off, but when I see cookies or something like that, I can't help myself. But at the same time, I'm not going to.
But I do remember you showing me that you did like 60 miles this week versus 30 miles the week before. Was that?
No. That was, I think it was, no, I did twice as this month.
Maybe 60
I did,
this
yeah.
week versus 30.
So I did twice as much.
So that was an effect of the log. It had a spillover.
It certainly was.
Some level of confidence in your process, right?
But I think it's like the confidence. What's the wheel that you...
He starts with conviction, it goes to persistence, and then moves to paying attention, and then your concentration faculty, and then your wisdom is growing from
yes.
the ability to be.
And it feeds off of each other. It's a cumulative effect,
right.
because now before my baseline might have been something as a minimum run, and now I'm running more and feeling like I've really accomplished things. So I have a lot of pride.
How about the actual execution of your running when you're training and when you're doing it? Are you seeing quality in the results?
Well, oddly enough, your voice kind of is in my head, which I don't know. Maybe that's good or bad, but make it pleasurable. When you, I know at Fort Worth Meditation, when we do our meditations, you often say to the group, we want this sit to be pleasurable.
Right.
So make it pleasurable, play with your breath, you know, see how it feels, what are the body sensations that you're getting. I've taken that and transferred it to my running and
right.
my breathing, because I don't like listening to music when I go out and run. I find that to be distracting, and I feel like that, for me, hijacks my rhythm and tempo and my breathing, because I feel like it just runs away with the music. So I don't have anything. So I'm really kind of using my mind and trying to fabricate, as we say, what kind of running environment I want. And so I find myself, when I'm feeling kind of out of sync, I say, make it pleasurable. And it's amazing how I end up taking like this big deep breath and everything just falls back into place again and we start all over. So I find that all of this is coming into play on a very real basis for my recreation.
You know, when I asked you about how being persistent in running is similar to, or how it interfaces with your practice of reliable happiness and the 10 ideal mind qualities, there was a pause. But do you see all the integration, Alex? Can you see how she's...
Oh, absolutely.
This is not your running is not separate from your reliable happiness efforts. I mean, you're using efforts in meditation, efforts in your journaling, calming qualities. So it's not just all of a sudden you read an article on how you can get ready for a 10-mile run, and all of a sudden, by happenstance, you happen to be persistent this time around. You've got a lot of things going on there that you just described.
Well, I think it's a lot of skillful stuff.
Yeah.
That I'm finding that is making it enjoyable. I'm not finding it to be stressful.
But what I'm trying to kind of illuminate is, if somebody were listening to the show versus another radio show that was saying, here's how I'm doing well on my run, and let me see if I can pick up a tip of how I can do well. I mean, there is no one tip anyone could pick up. They need to listen to the totality of your story and understand that your persistence is happening as a result of a lot of little things.
I think we can also see that running itself is a skillful action for you, because it allows her to work on those qualities. The
yes.
running is allowing her to work through those qualities, which is, I think, a skillful use of time. If you're
she's solely working on
running. And oddly enough, this is another thing I found out. You know how a couple weeks ago we were talking about strengths,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about mature versus raw,
right.
and how part of the journaling was, if you wanted to jumpstart your journal, look at some of the raw talent, raw parts of the talent, which is immature and not quite developed yet.
Right.
And those, if you look truthfully enough at those are some of the things that you are that are not skillful, that you possibly might want to change
right.
or just alter a little bit. So it's funny, because one of my strengths is achiever. And now achiever is... one of the mature strength is I must produce needed results.
Right.
But the raw part is I must keep busy doing anything.
Yeah.
So as part of persistence, you could see how as an achiever strength,
right.
I could be, I think, Alex, a couple of weeks ago, you talked about putting a ladder against the wrong building. You know, you're climbing,
mm-hmm.
climbing. And then it's so, I mean, you could be a busy bee and not be skillful at doing what you're supposed
right.
to. But this sort of like plays right into my mature strength, in that it gives me a needed result in a very skillful way.
Yeah.
So I really kind of tied a lot of things into it. But
I love the introspection. I love the fact that you really dug this apart and begun to understand it, because, you know,
persistence has a reinforcing element. You know, like the choo-choo train story, I think I can, I know I can.
Right.
I mean, by reflecting the way you are, it must give you a lot of confidence in your ability to execute at work and do other things, because it seems to me like the same raw materials are being used to produce the needed results.
Well, I think I find...
It's not running that's doing it, is what
no.
I'm saying. This is your skillfulness that's producing the
right.
running.
But these elements can be translated to anything.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it. It's not like...
happiness.
It's not compartmentalized. Right. It's like, okay, here's persistence, and it can only be over here for something like this.
Well, you're building the mind qualities, and it's helping you be mature in your talent themes. Your natural talents are being mature as a result of building the mind qualities. Your efforts in, you know, competing are improving. Your efforts at work are improving. That's why it seems that the mind qualities are the center of the universe. If you work on those, a lot of things come together is what I'm saying.
Well, it does feel like a lot of them are, it feels like a lot more is falling into place because they're being used more effectively.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I do like starting with the story and going through, and it's not like you have to work on mind qualities and then all of a sudden the running comes. Like Alex just said, you can work on the running and build the mind qualities.
No doubt about it.
It's a holistic approach, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You can use your running to build your mind qualities.
Absolutely.
You can work on the fabrication of your mind, the idea of pleasurable actions, you know, and foreseeing pleasure in your body through your running. It's the same thing we said in meditation.
We talk about body sensations.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're running, at any given moment, you've got something going on with your body, whether, you know.
Yeah, but you're paying attention to that versus how many more miles have I got left?
Exactly.
Or, you know, all of the things that would weigh on you. Again, it's being training that mind to pay attention to one thing.
What you bring to it or what you're adding to it, the fabrication is, oh, I can't believe this, or, you know, it's, here comes a hill, or, you know.
Well, I know Alex in his curriculum dealing with the sports side of things so often is, you're a big advocate of paying attention to the body as your center, huh?
Oh, yeah. Body, actions, all the, you know, as you begin to see these qualities play out, they're very action-oriented qualities. In that if you look to your actions, you can probably choose a quality that's corresponding to it at any one time. You know, look for those actions of restraint, actions of character, actions of persistence. And these actions are going all the time, whether you're running or whether you're driving or whether you're walking to the mailbox. You know, put an eye on it. Is there a quality going on right now? Are you building something? And then if not, it's a... You know, maybe a letting go moment to where you can drop the unskillful activity and pick up something that is building one of those qualities, perhaps.
So. Do you think when you're paying attention to the body so much that you tend to get away from the mind and not be so preoccupied with the negative emotional side?
I think for some it's a little more tangible. I think it's something you can kind of put a heartbeat to. You can kind of feel it on a different level. Sometimes you get caught up in the head and it becomes a little too distant, even though it's right there. So I think the body has a good way of, you know, bringing things right back to a kind of a relative sense and kind of a, you know, if you were to measuring results, something that you can more put your finger on a little bit easier, maybe a, you know, not so much a long-term result, but a kind of short-term,
yeah.
You know,
effect. I think too. That, you know, you were talking about it takes yourself out of your head, so to speak. I think it gives, you often say that your mind wants to feed, so it keeps going out, going out, going out. But with your body, you're really giving it some pretty decent food for thought.
Yeah.
As far as,
because that kind of
skillful thought is going to pay big dividends. Because the body sensations... it's going to help you really in the long run as far as reflection.
Go ahead.
We're getting a text. Doug, I don't know from the show, I got one of our listeners saying they're having a hard time hearing us. Why don't we take a break now and maybe we can check if there is some technical difficulties. Let's take a break and then Alex, we'll get into your interview side.
Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Welcome back.
We are back.
We're back. For those of you that are using the app on the iPhones, because I guess the new version of 8.iOS 8, there's some technical difficulties. If you're having trouble with the app, you can try the web version. In other words, use your browser to, if you're using through a phone, use the browser to bring up bbsradio.com. And listen that way. Alex, persistence. Where have you exercised persistence in your life?
So coming on the show, I began to look a little bit more at my life as a whole and see kind of what sort of experiences I could bring on today and speak about. And the first thing I jumped to having almost a year ago, having started my own company and business, I felt like, oh yeah, you know, that's your startup business. That's your classic persistent fella right there. So I said, well, let me see if I can dig a little bit deeper and see what really where does my persistence lie? Where is really that effort and that energy that I place? And as I began to examine it more, I looked at my role as a parent, and I looked at the role of a parent, and I said, wow, you know, after looking at everything that goes on, you've got to be one persistent person as a parent. And being a parent is a very special, very gratifying, but very important role. Kind of being that leader for a young mind that's so impressionable and watching all the time. And so the persistence for me comes in really the way in which I parent, in making sure that my actions are continuing to go in a direction of the goal of what I want to accomplish as a parent. I want my kids to go to a good school. I want them to get a good education. I want them to be teaching themselves their own tools and how that they can succeed in life. And I want to see them grow up and make mistakes and learn from them. And so those are the goals as a parent that I want to reach. And so I'm very persistent in the way I act, I speak, the way I introduce values and those sorts of things around the children. And what I love about persistence as a truth quality is because it will reveal truth, in the sense that you have to look at your persistence and see, is it getting me the results I want? Which then builds conviction right around the loop. And so when I see my child make a mistake and then come back over it, or if they're playing in a sports game and maybe, you know, they threw an interception and then come back the next play and they're right out there, they've thrown or completed something, right? And seeing them do that kind of gives me my own conviction and reaffirms my persistence and kind of the values and the way that I'm leading them towards getting that result that I want to look for as a parent.
So there's no doubt the big context and the purpose behind it all helps drive that persistence.
It does. Absolutely. It kind of frames it and allows it to grow and gives me the almost that biofeedback, that ability to kind of check back in and make sure that ladder isn't on the wrong wall.
Right.
Because that's what I would define as apathy, is my ladder's on the wrong wall. So you can call it lazy, but basically it's not checking back in to see if what you're being persistent about.
That's so key.
Is aligned with where you're going.
Go ahead.
But I was going to say that's key. It's not that you're apathetic. It's if you're ladders against the wrong wall, you could be working at 100%. But if you missed seeing it or being skillful enough, that's where the honesty has to come in and say, you know, I missed the boat on this one. I should have looked sooner. I should have looked more often. I should have reassessed.
Yes.
I think that reassessment closes that loop.
Yes. Checking back.
Do you think somebody?
Yeah. I do. I think, you know, we think so much that persistence or energy is just a function of a simple desire to want. When you guys have given so much texture to your persistence and where you've been persistent, you see it's a lot of things. First of all, there's got to be a big picture and a context. You're using wisdom, you're using patience. You know, there's a lot of things at work here to be persistence.
I'll tell you what, I've just thought of something that where persistence created, where my ladder was against the wrong wall, I wasn't honest enough, and my persistence didn't pay off, and it created a tremendous amount of stress. And it goes back.
Well, that's what you say was truthful.
When I was working, what I thought my ideal job was going to be working for this big orthopedic group.
Right.
I was convinced that this is where I wanted to be, and my career was going to be. This was a few years ago.
Right.
I landed a job. I mean, it couldn't have been better situated. They were like tops in what they did. I got there. I swear. I think I was in there maybe a week, not even 2 weeks. And I thought, this is awful. This isn't the environment I wanted at all. But I worked so hard, and I just kind of was myopically focused, and I know the writing was on the wall. I just refused to see it or didn't open my eyes to see it. Or I was being, or averting, saying, oh, no, that's just a false, you're not reading it correctly, kind of thing.
Yep.
And boy, now that was a real learning lesson for me. But
I bet you went through the period of saying, I'm lazy or, boy, we're getting nobody hearing anything. We're getting 4 or 5 chats coming through saying they aren't hearing. I wonder how many of them are using the web browser or the iPhone.
Let's just keep going
podcasting tomorrow. But I think...
I didn't feel bad after that, but I felt like the honesty and the authenticity was you didn't look at it correctly.
Yeah, I think those three as truth qualities kind of play off each other, the authenticity, virtue, and persistence, that, you know, if you look closely, first of all, the other end of authenticity was autopilot. So let's say we're on autopilot, therefore we're probably choosing a lot more vice actions.
Right.
If you look at those vice actions, they're typically apathetic. They're on the wrong wall. So
yes.
You can see the chain of those three and how they bring together that truthness. And just like we, right there, it's easy to say, I can relate to that, especially in a job that I had before. When I put that in line with the persistence of being my parent role, the job was taking me away from that role, what I was looking to achieve. So that why I felt as though, hey, I've got a job and I'm bringing stability, there were certain things about the job that were taking stuff almost out of the bucket.
Right.
And so I had to make a discerning choice of, do I continue down this path or this path? And when you look at it, once you bring the eye to it at those kinds of levels and you're willing to sit down and be truthful and look at it, the choices become very easy. The hardest thing is willing to sit down and look at it. Because once you look at it, the choice is right there in front of you, and most of the time you're going to make a skillful choice over and on.
And that comes up with those four choices that we always talk about, things you like to do that don't get you the good results.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the things that kind of sucks you off, so to speak.
My daughter last night, I had asked her to do some reflecting and kind of write something down for me. And she said, I said, could you just, what do you think? Do you think you could give me 10 minutes a day just to, we'll just do an activity together in reflection? She said, oh, yeah. She's like, that just, yeah, that's going to be hard because it's not something I want to do. I said,
She actually said that?
Yeah, she said that. And she was being truthful. And I said, that's great because you're exactly proving the point that it's perceived as something that, you know, to spend time reflecting on one's own actions and thoughts is not the first thing we all get excited and jump to. But it does produce the results we are looking for. So.
That's interesting.
Like I said, it's that wisdom faculty when I started my recognition and gratitudes. If you know what you're doing and you've got the choice, that choice up front that makes purposeful sense, it's amazing how energetic you can be.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that, you were talking about the biofeedback, so when you recognize this persistence, do you think it's a combination, do you have a sitting practice, are you doing your journaling, is it a combination of both, is it one versus the other? Or is it equal?
Yeah, you know, it is. It does come from a few different ways. And when you recognize that you're being persistent, it really is, it becomes energizing. You actually get almost like a B12 shot, right?
It's like the endorphins.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
You get these endorphins and you go through the cycle of, you know, if you slow it down, you end up giving yourself conviction right there, like, the old attaboy, go out there and keep doing it, you know, keep going, keep doing it. And it's
it's your own biofeedback that mm-hmm. says, I'm on the right track, keep going. You're on the right track,
keep going. And you know, the great thing about persistence, and not, like I said, when you check back in, you know, you're being persistent in so many different walks of activities that go on through a day. There's persistence on the grand level where it's, you know, your big overriding umbrella of persistence. And then there's your day-to-day persistence on specific activities. So you have to be persistent to a point where you can see whether or not it's worth it to continue on that road. At times, you feel, oh, I've been persistent, that I can't let it go because I've been so persistent.
Right.
But once again, a truth quality, if it stops getting you to being skillful and getting you closer to your result, then it's not worth continuing that persistence in that sort of activity. Let it go.
It's divesting yourself, almost like get rid of a sinking stock or something.
Right. So the persistence, you just keep checking back in. Is this still getting me the results? Is this still going? Good. Then let's keep going. Is it still going? Good. Let's keep going. Is it not? Okay. I dropped that one. Let me pick up something else and be persistent in that and gauge that result.
Do you think you would have such resolve if you didn't have a contemplative practice or some sort of contemplation on a daily basis?
No.
Could you do it without?
I would never say you couldn't do anything. I just think it, I guess improbable would maybe be the term that you have to slow down and build a practice of at least, like I said, authenticity is kind of the first of the truth quality. So it's kind of right there, keeping yourself off autopilot and in that authentic, you know, that authentic mode. Takes a bit of skill in acquiring that skill to kind of slow down and be able to kind of, you know, dissect.
Yeah, it starts with honesty. You've got to be honest about your actions and your intentions behind your actions.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else flows because you're looking, Carol, to your point, the contemplation, you're looking to truthfully understand your experience.
But that's part of one of the mind qualities, goodwill. I mean, offering goodwill and generosity towards yourself.
Right.
To give yourself that kind of
absolutely
calm and time can reap huge benefits.
And again, that getting to your gratitude, it's good that you have family that you can be truthful with.
Mm-hmm.
Think of, like you said, your coworker who doesn't have that, so she's forced to have to do it by herself. I'm hoping this is what admirable friends do for people that don't have those support systems.
Because if you can't be honest, I mean, I got off a coaching call from England today, and he was being honest with me as to what, you know, his week was like. And sometimes I don't know if it's just me or just that having the ability to someone to listen to, you know, someone, be honest and let them talk through their experience. There's no magic. Once we're really honest about what we're doing, most people prefer not to be stressful. They really prefer to be reliably happy, but they've got to slow down enough to and be honest enough. It's not just slow down, it's also be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But again, how are you honest without a support group? I don't know how that happens. I mean, that's why I'm grateful to my teachers, the environment I've had, my family, all of the above. Allowing that honesty to percolate up, you'd go crazy trying to keep all this stuff in.
Well, it's so difficult. The outside environment, there's so many things vying for your attention. You know, everybody's pulling you, everything outside is pulling you in 10 different directions.
Well, that's where they want the energy to go
that's
for you
right.
to buy something.
So, you know.
Heaven forbid for your own benefit.
You know, so it's constantly, you're being inundated. And even if you wanted to, I mean, you could say to yourself, I just want 5 minutes of peace and quiet to myself.
Hmm.
It's very difficult.
You know, you brought up goodwill, and I want to go back to that as being another mind quality and seeing the two tied together. If you view the practice of self-reflection, whatever kind of means it takes, but a side time for you to kind of reflect on your own experience, kind of check in with yourself, if you view that as an act of goodwill, as I have, the experience becomes a much more leveraging activity than trying to go and to produce a lot of goodwill outside yourself.
Right.
Okay? So you can go and create 5 acts of goodwill externally or 1 giant act of goodwill yourself. It's like becoming the example.
Well, especially if you're doing those external acts for the wrong reasons.
Sure.
You know, feeling insecure or wanting to be liked or a whole host of other...
Or you know, doing a goodwill act because you know, hey, the timer's almost up. I got to put in an act of goodwill here before my day's
right.
out. You know?
No, it all starts with letting yourself off the hook, saying, I really desire to be reliably happy, right? That's the first thing. I desire to be reliably happy. Second thing, what choices do I make towards reliable happiness? What choices do I make towards stress? And then you learn how to discern. You learn how to be honest about your experience. This stuff is not very complicated. We go through these 10 mind qualities. We throw terms around. But you can really simplify a lot of it.
And it's because I see the results of the goodwill of creating that practice for myself. I see the results in the world that I project out there. That gives me the conviction to say persistence and continue that daily practice.
Yes.
It's because I'm seeing what that practice on that goodwill level is doing.
First of all, if you wish yourself and others goodwill, by the fact that you're wishing it for yourself, you're going to wish it for others. You feel better about yourself, and as a result, you're going to express yourself that way. When people are being lousy to other people, that's how they feel about themselves.
Sure.
We all know that by now. So you've got to start by treating yourself decently, with respect and honesty, and now all of a sudden you start being honest with the rest of the world.
Well, you've heard the saying before, misery loves company, and everyone says, oh yeah, I hear that, and they kind of laugh it up, but the truth is right there.
It is.
You know, misery does love company, and
but
so
also
it's infectious, you know.
The saying, helping yourself is helping others, is
mm-hmm.
opposite and truthful as well, adversely.
It's
well, can I tell that story of what Tom Tway had taught me about the quicksand? You know, about helping yourself is helping others.
Go ahead, Tom.
Coincidentally enough, I was giving that during a coaching call today. But when I first started training with her, we didn't know at the time she was a Zen master. But in any case, I asked her the question, and I was feeling like what she was teaching me was kind of selfishly motivated towards myself. And I said, well, how do I decide how much to help others versus myself? She goes, it's the same. I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, were you there at the time? Because she said, well, imagine you and Carol are in quicksand and you're both going down. And there is a tree to your left. What do you do? I said, I grab the tree and then I grab Carol and we're out. She goes, see, it's the same.
You took care of yourself and you took care of Carol. One exercise. Helping yourself is helping others.
And that's where I see often that a lot of self-reflective practice gets kind of the bashing and saying, well, it's very selfish. But they have a term called selfless. And it's that same concept almost that the leverage is in if you do the hard work on yourself, it's going to transmit outwardly.
Yeah.
You know, it's an energy.
Well, psychologists have known this for years. They know that the way you treat the world is the way you treat yourself, you know. So the opposite is true. I mean, if you're treating yourself with respect and honesty and dignity, you're likely to do it to others. But it's a very difficult environment when it's highly competitive, highly desirous, and like you say, they're trying to sell you something all the time, and you're trying to get your 2 cents. So when you do go the opposite way, you wish goodwill without any limits, you know, because goodwill is not the same as loving everybody. It's not the same as love thy neighbor. Goodwill is I wish and hope that that person or others around me, you know, learn about the causes of reliable happiness and act upon it. So it's kind of a wisdom wish versus a loving, feeling wish. And
yeah,
there shouldn't be any limits for that. You should be able to let that, everybody wants to be able
to. Yeah,
that
costs nothing to get that kind of, that limitless goodwill.
Yeah, and the same thing holds for generosity, because I think they're very closely related. You take the concept of goodwill, what I call harmlessness, and generosity. Those three all relate together. It's a mindset of an abundance mentality that says, let me give. Let me give.
It's where I like persistence comes in with all these qualities, is when you see the effects of those sorts of things like generosity and goodwill, you want to do more of it.
Yes.
You want to continue down that road. And it's...
Because it's wise.
It's wise. And once you bring your eye to it, like I said, the choice is easy.
Yeah.
If you see that an act of goodwill or an act of generosity leads to less stress in your life, why would you not want to continue?
Well, and goodwill is a strategy. You know, it's under our wisdom quality areas where it's categorized, which basically means that you've already thought it through. If I use ill will, it's going to come back and haunt me. It's a strategy. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's like, does it make any sense? Because it's the same thing, you know, and I hate to get on a political soapbox, but with war, it's like, what good is going to be killing somebody? Do you ever stamp out any of this? Because they just have children that are upset with being the parents being killed.
Yeah.
There's nothing good that can come out of a harmful act. It's just going to come back and hurt you. So that it sounds like harmlessness or... but even in the Christian faith, it's... What is it? The meek shall inherit the earth. It's, why do you cause problems with outside? It's only going to come back and haunt you. It's a smart strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it feeds your fuel for doing good works. And then have plenty of energy. It seems like there's an abundance of energy. But now when you look at the apathy side, what is it that drains you? What is it that drains you? It's behavior that's not consistent, like you said, Carol, with your mission. You're in a job that it has no purpose for you. I'm drained. I'm apathetic.
Well, then you start looking for other, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You start looking for other chinks in the armor, and then you start, oh, well, it was me.
And then
the world evolves. And then,
these things all go together.
It's no good can come out of that one. It just has a chain of events that is really negative, draining. You know, you get that toxic feeling, and then you make it stink, and it's sort of like crazy.
Well, this, relates, and I'm glad that we were able to take something as meaty as persistence, which everybody wants persistent. They want to be persistent in their activity, and link it to goodwill, link it to generosity, link it to the other virtues, and see that these things aren't separate.
I would say that I think one of the more successes of persistence is taking small steps. Digestible bites. Sometimes when you get out of the gate and you're going, But there again, I guess that's from not looking at it in a truthful manner, because if you saw it that way, you would take small steps and where it should be. You could take the appropriate step to where it needs to be.
Well, in that regard, one of the, and again, our curriculum is completely online. It's free under admirablefriends.org, and just press the curriculum button and it's all available free online. But if you look at the 9 skillful efforts, Carol, and the approaches, the one that struck me about what you just said is that pride and honor as a skillful approach. And under pride and honor, it says develop a craftsman's sense of pride and honor that comes from developing and honing a skill. Take joy in what we have done well. Now, there's a way of having persistence.
Yes.
You take that skillful craftsman's approach, which is a step at a time. Do you ever know anybody that honed in a craft without taking a step at a time?
No, you do, whether it's pottery or whether it's glass work or whatever. You do something, you stand back, you look at it.
Yes.
That's what I like about persistence. It's saying, hey, this is a process.
Yes.
It's a process. This is not a light switch that it's just going to go on or off.
Well, we've got a few seconds left, but anyways, it's been great. Boy, time flew again. But like I said, all of this beyond the show document, the entire curriculum is online and free at admirablefriends.org, where you can see different ways of skillfully approaching persistence. They're called the 9 skillful approaches, different types of right effort. It's all there, and we've got always willing to write us a hello at admirablefriends.org with any questions you have regarding this practice. It's wonderful. The three of us are definitely there to help. I can't stress that enough. We're here and we want to help you.
That's
so
true.
Please write us a hello at admirablefriends.org, and great to see you this week, or hear you. In some cases, we had some technical difficulties, but catch us on the podcast. It's usually available by 2 o'clock tomorrow.
That's the beauty of having that.
All right. Till next week, folks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Alan.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.